From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This hour, one small business owner in the service industry talks about the problems in thinking through reopening.
In a bar where we have pool tables and a live music room, to try to tell people stay 6 feet away from each other is going to be really difficult.
Also, one Michigan landscaper walks us through the math he's doing these days to help his employees.
Pretty much everybody that can't work in the field is laid off and getting unemployment benefits that are greater than what they would earn working.
So which is better, the payroll preservation program or straight-up unemployment? Also today, on the eve of Ramadan, we take a moment to ponder the sacrifices of the holiday and how they look different this year for Muslim Michiganders.
For medical and healthcare workers, they've already doing the sacrifices that Ramadan calls for.
Those stories and more coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Tonight marks the beginning of Ramadan. We'll hear later this hour how celebration happens in a markedly not festive time for Muslim Michiganders.
It's a good time for us to reflect, to practice discipline, to be able to focus in a pure way this relationship with God.
But first, we're about to find out what Governor Whitmer has in mind for the stay-at-home orders set in place to slow COVID-19. She's expected to address this issue on Friday. We've been spending a little bit of time every week with small businesses affected by the lockdown. One of the places that you might find yourself missing the most right now are all the neighborhood spots woven into the fabric of just about every town in Michigan. Brian Brickley is the owner of one of them, the Tap Room in Ypsilanti, and he joins us now from his home. Brian, welcome to Stateside.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
So for those who've not had the pleasure, would you tell us a little bit about the Tap Room?
So our place, as your intro described, is just a classic neighborhood gathering place. It was started in 1941, and we bought it from the original owner in 1994. When we bought it, it was a rundown place with about 60 seats, and now has grown to over 150 seats. It's three times as large and has become quite a successful business, mainly due to the brilliant entrepreneur that my wife, Lisa Brickley, is. It's her vision of how a bar should be run, and our customers love her for it.
So if I had come to the Tap Room maybe 3 months ago and just been looking for the house special, what would I have gotten?
You would have got a cold beer and a warm burger. Our Tap Room burger is our biggest seller. But you would have been surrounded by some really fun and interesting people, and that's what it would have made your trip worthwhile.
Can you tell us a little bit about how many people you had on staff before the outbreak?
Sure. We fluctuate between 15 and 20 employees. And at the time we had to close, we had 15 employees who have all since applied for unemployment.
That's got to be pretty rough.
It's devastating. It's devastating to see what it's done to them. And, there were tears in their eyes fortunately, in most cases, they were able to get unemployment, and that's making it a little easier on them. But they're our friends and family, and it's really sad.
Was takeout food an option for you once the lockdown got started?
Not really. Being that really the majority of our sales are beer, wine, and liquor, and 30% is food, it just didn't make sense. We're also not in a great spot to pull up and park and we're right downtown on Michigan Avenue. So no, it was really never a consideration. It would have been a break even or lose money proposition for us.
Gosh. Have you heard anything from your regulars?
A few that are kindly posting things like we can't wait to come back. But although, we know all their first names and we do see them on social media, not a lot of them have been able to touch base with us, but they tend to be known as John the Bud Light guy or Susie the vanilla vodka girl. So that's how we kind of know and love our customers.
Right. Brian, I understand you took a run at some of the small business loans that were intended to help people meet payroll. How did that go for you?
Well, it's been challenging. And so there's multiple options available. So the one you hear the most about is the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program. And what that was designed to do, as I understand it, is to provide you money to rehire people and give you about 2.5 months of payroll. In addition to that, they would give you another 25% that you could use for general operating expenses, rent, and utilities. The reason we declined that one is, in reality, our employees would get less money than they get on unemployment. And as it turned out, and as you know, news reports have indicated, the big companies have sucked up all that money anyway, and very little has trickled down to small businesses like ours. So that one I scratched off the list pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The one I did apply for, and I'm still kind of cautiously optimistic about, is the disaster loan through the Small Business Administration, which is designed for areas that get hit by a hurricane or a tornado. And it's so what they did is they designated the entire country as a disaster area. It's a pretty streamlined application right online. And when it works, they're supposed to give you an advance of $10,000 and then a loan at reduced interest rates. So far, I haven't heard anything other than when I called them, they said I'm in line. So here we are a month into it, and that has not produced any funds at all to help us.
Right.
And I don't know if you've heard about the Liquor Control Commission in the state of Michigan has come up with a plan, too, that's the liquor buyback program for bars and restaurants. So what they have designed this to do is let you borrow against the inventory of liquor you have. They would take possession of it, but leave it in your establishment, front you the money, and then 90 days after the emergency stay order has been lifted, you have to pay it all back. Later, the problem is if you can't pay it back after the 90-day period, you're not allowed to order any more liquor. So it's kind of a scary thing. You know, we know we've got the liquor in the basement and in the storage room, and we know it's there. But the last thing we want to be faced with is 90 days into being reopened is not being able to pay that money back and have any future orders shut off. We've been here 25 years. We're pretty rock solid on our financing. I don't think it'll happen, but it's
a risk. You know, yeah.
It is a risk. That's a great way to put it.
So, Brian, that actually leads to a question that we had been wondering about. Well, first of all, did you decide to try that program from the Liquor Control Board?
Yesterday, we were a definite no. This morning, my wife and I were a definite maybe.
Okay.
And so I've got a big, long Excel spreadsheet with all the inventory on it. And all I got to do is punch in the numbers and it'll tell me how much I can get. So I've got till Friday to decide, and I haven't decided.
So let's say businesses are allowed to reopen. I think what you're getting at with the Liquor Control Board program is, what if you do reopen and the customer base just isn't there in the first few weeks to really recoup this deal that you made? Do you think that people will come back right away when the order is lifted and bars and restaurants can reopen?
Well, this gets to the heart of the matter, doesn't it? And the heart of the matter is the uncertainty of the entire situation. I don't know if they will. I don't know if they'll come back in the numbers that they did before. I don't know if there'll be some kind of unusual social distancing criteria and guidelines that we have to follow that are extremely difficult in a bar where we have pool tables and a live music room. To try to tell people stay 6 feet away from each other is going to be really difficult. I don't know if the fear that people have will keep them away for a while. And this gets also to the biggest dilemma. 90 days after the reopening is going to be the toughest time for all bars and restaurants. And here's why. To open, I have to buy all the perishable items that are no longer in my establishment because I gave them to employees or I gave them to Forgotten Harvest. I have to pay not only the taxes that are going to be due in July, August, and September, I have to pay the taxes that the state has kindly allowed us to forego for now. So the worst part for small businesses is perhaps not now. It's 90 days from now or 120 days from now. And we're all going to be waving our flags and saying, you know, we did it. That's when businesses are going to start shutting their doors. And they're going to be doing it quietly, and it's going to be extremely sad because no one's going to then be there to help them like they're trying to help them now. So the answer to your question is, I just don't know.
So I guess the next question is, if we're not sure if Governor Whitmer intends to reopen some businesses on May 1st, and we're certainly not sure if bars and restaurants would be among them, but if that happened, would you be comfortable coming back to work and having your employees come back?
We would have to see what data is out there to justify that it's safe. You know, certainly as a bar owner, we're not medical experts. We would also ask our employees what their thoughts were on it and get their input. Do you feel comfortable coming back? Do you want, you know, we know they're going to want to come back for the money, but is it safe for them to come back? And we just don't know. That's, once again, back to the uncertainty that all of us bar owners and restaurant owners are facing right now. I might even have to, you know, consult a legal counsel to say, what's my liability of reopening? It's going to be a tough decision. You know, I don't think she's going to open it with the rest of the economy on the 1st or the 15th or whatever. I think it'll be the last stage of any economic reopening would be bars and restaurants. And that's probably the correct choice.
Right. Now, when you think about the other businesses in your neighborhood, the Ipsy Ale House, I think Ziggy's is right across the street. There's an ice cream shop. What are you hearing from the neighborhood, other businesses in the neighborhood about what their feelings are about reopening?
You know, there's a Zoom meeting tonight with some of them, and I haven't directly heard from any of them. I do have friends in other businesses in other areas. I live out in Manchester. And everyone's feeling the same thing, you know, just this uncertainty. I've applied for this. I've applied for that. So the consensus is uncertainty, you know, mixed in with a little bit of dread and a little bit of optimism all at the same time.
Yeah. What's keeping you going right now?
Well, basically, I've got a 25-year head start on most businesses, and I'm sure grateful for that right now. Like I mentioned earlier, my wife is a brilliant entrepreneur, and she set up a business that has paid for itself over the years to the point now where we're pretty financially, we're okay. We're not rich. And that's a misconception that people have, is that, hey, all these small businesses and medium-sized businesses are loaded. Nothing could be farther from the truth. 45% of businesses go out of business in the first 5 years because it's tough, because the money is not always there. If this would have happened to us in our first 10 years, it would have killed us. We'd have been done. So what keeps me going is the fact that it sure could be worse. I'm home with my beautiful family and my beautiful house in the woods in Manchester. So, you know, I got a lot of faith in our customers and our staff and our business. And so I'm excited. Actually, I can't wait to get back.
Brian Brickley is the owner of the Tap Room in Ypsilanti, and he's been talking to us from home. Brian, thank you so much. We hope you're able to open your doors again.
All right, April. Well, I appreciate it.
Coming up, we touch base with some other small business owners about how they're dealing with the stay-at-home order and how they're thinking about what comes next.
We're having to think about, what does our model look like 6 months from now, and how do we keep people safe?
Stay with us. This is Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Looking at the protests in Lansing last week, it's easy to come to the conclusion that Michigan's landscaping professionals have spoken en masse. But there is considerable diversity within the ranks. Travin Pelletier is the owner of Lotus Gardenscapes, based in Dexter. And we called him up to talk to him about how his business is going these days. Travin, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
Just to be clear, you were not down in Lansing last week, right?
Correct. No, we're all safe following the stay-at-home order here in Dexter and Ann Arbor area. And definitely we're not in Lansing. I wrote a letter to the governor on Monday as a result of that.
Right. I want to ask you a little bit about that. But before we do, can you tell us a little bit about your work? How long have you been in the business?
Sure. I actually would prefer to start with just a thank you to all of the local, regional, and state officials and first responders and healthcare workers, essential workers, and particularly the governor. I want them to hear that there are professional landscape people out there that are following the rules and are very grateful for their work. I know this is an impossible situation many people are in. It's a serious problem, and we are very grateful for their work.
Awesome.
So that said, we're basically a design build, mostly residential landscape company. We also have a tree service, so we do actually have some essential services happening, which are hazard tree work, and there is some spray work that's allowed under the essential qualification. We pride ourselves on high-quality work. We have a great local staff of artisans and craftsmen. We're known for creativity, quality, beauty.
How many people do you have working with you?
We have somewhere between 30 and 40, depending on the time of the season. We also do have a small retail garden center at our location on Baker Road in Dexter.
So what does business look like for a landscape architect and agriculturalist? Is there any work you can do from home?
Yeah, actually, one of our first responses was to put our sales design team on remote. So we've all been working from home. We've been consulting with our clients. We actually came up with a proactive horticultural consult service that donates 25% of its intake to the Hope Clinic in Ipsy. So we jumped right on the bandwagon of working remotely and trying to keep our customer contacts and new customers' situations alive by just working from home on a computer. Obviously, that's kind of limited in relation to what you can do when you can't go to the site, but you'd be surprised how creative you can get with a a phone. And everybody's properties have digital photos on the county databases. So there's design work we can do.
Nice. Have you run into any situations where people who you've worked with in the past have to make a decision about whether it's worth their while to come back to work or whether they want to try to take their chances with unemployment benefits?
I guess the short answer is yes and also no. There definitely are people that have personal situations where they have kids that no longer are in school and they're single parents.
Right.
That don't have a solution yet for daycare. That's something we're looking at right now. What are our options if the stop work order is lifted?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, we have a dedicated staff that our office manager likes to joke that the field staff, that we're all outside cats, and at a certain point in the year, everybody gets a little stir crazy. That's definitely multiplied 20-fold right now with the stay-at-home work order. So I think everybody's ready to get back to work. There is a weird situation with the level of unemployment benefits they're getting. However, that is also temporary. So I think as soon as we can work, and that's my message to the governor, we want to work when it's safe, when you feel it's safe. We want to put in a voice that says, we can work outside safely for sure. This is already a socially isolated type of work.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your letter to Governor Whitmer. You were you made a very pointed ask to her to allow landscapers to be exempt from the shutdown. What was it that made you decide to try to reach out in that way?
Well, I don't think that's what I'm asking. So I think the words are very specific and important. I know she's working really hard on this and trying to make decisions about what can be rolled out when. I would like her to hear from the landscapers that are complying with the order and respect what she's trying to do, that we feel like we can actually work safely with COVID protocols in place, with social isolation. We work outdoors. We have one or two person crews that don't need to interact with each other. This is a type of work that could happen under the shutdown. I would prefer to be asking her, so my actual words are, please consider us in the rollout of releasing different types of work. The word problem I'm having is exempt. I feel like that was part of the problem with the protests last week. I don't want to be exempt. I want to be part of the solution.
Right.
I think we can do this safely.
Why do you think it is that there were so many landscapers rallying around the call to reopen? There were a few people who, you know, sort of self-identified or brought gear along with them, you know, standing right alongside other working people and along with some right-wing groups. What did you make of the fact that landscapers got so much attention?
Well, I mean, I'd say that's pretty hard to generalize. I mean, I think humor at this time is important. So I would restate my outdoor cat statement. You know, landscapers like to be outdoors. They like to be working. They're hardworking people. It's a tough time. Like we're used to in March getting out there. April's one of the biggest months in the industry. So, you know, having this run all the way through April and possibly further definitely is a tough thing for a lot of landscapers. I think also it's a really strong agricultural state. We have a huge agricultural landscape business background in this state. The lobbies are pretty big. I know the organizations we're part of have all been discussing this with the governor since it started.
Right. If this were all in your hands, how do you think lawmakers should determine who can and who should be able to get back to work first and safely?
Well, I'm not a health expert, and there's so many opinions out there. You know, I don't want to add to the cultural clashes that are happening, really. My personal opinion is, and I think I'm hearing a little of this coming out of Lansing now, is in terms of what they're considering, is I think it can be looked at regionally. I think there's entire sections of the state that have very little COVID and are very rural. I don't want that message to be combined with what's coming out of our president's mouth or the federal government. I don't agree with that. I think we should look at certain types and classes of work, and it gets really messy. I know for myself, with the particular landscape segment that we're in, and we do landscape design, build, construction that's residential, that we can operate safely. You know, obviously the initial shutdown is really difficult for businesses like restaurants and gyms, like where you have people tight together in close proximity. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't seem safe yet. But again, I'm not in charge. And I really wanted to lend a compassionate voice from the landscape industry, both towards the governor and towards everybody that's working hard on this, and say there are landscape professionals and construction professionals out there that are really following the order, respect it, and at the same time feel like when the time is right, which seems like it could be soon, we're ready to go back to work outdoors and enact safe COVID procedures.
Trivan, I want to thank you for everything that you put in the letter and all your thoughts at this time. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Trivan Pelletier is the owner of Lotus Gardenscapes, based in Dexter. Gyms and personal training facilities are on the list of non-essential businesses under the terms of Governor Whitmer's executive order to stay at home. We don't know about you, but Nintendo Switch active games sometimes just aren't enough. Mark Tiesmeyer Hook is the owner of Better Living Fitness in Ann Arbor. He's a personal trainer, and he's agreed to come on and talk about his business today. Mark, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. We have made quite a pivot over the last month. On March 16th, we were shut down by Governor Whitmer's order as one of the first rounds of businesses, along with bars and restaurants.
So it's over a month now.
It is over a month. And the first thought I had was, how do I keep my clients strong and healthy during this outbreak? We work with an older population, baby boomers and their parents. And some of them rely on us for strength that helps them to be able to stay in their own homes. So that was my first priority. The second priority was, how do I keep my staff employed?
Well, it sounds like there's a whole host of safety concerns there, from the safety of your clients to the safety of your own staff.
Definitely. And I do not disagree at all with Governor Whitmer's order for us to stay at home. I do disagree that our training is a non-essential service. So I worked right away to figure out how to keep my staff safe and how to keep our clients safe. And we switched over to video-based training right away. It took us about a week to get that retooling done. And we've been coaching, you know, our even elderly clients in how to use Zoom and FaceTime and Google Hangouts to do their training. And they've actually been really thankful that we've been able to keep them strong and still exercising.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be a really high priority. You wrote to us in an email that the Paycheck Protection Program money was running out in a way that hit you particularly hard. Could you tell us about what happened?
Yeah. I am, as a business owner, was scrambling like everybody else, trying to figure out where we could get funds from. Despite our ability to pivot and move to online training, we've still lost over 50% of our revenue. Where we still have a gym space rent to pay, and we still have full staff salaries to pay. You know, that was a real hard hit. So I reached out to the county, to the state, and to the federal government, applying for both the Paycheck Protection Loan and the Small Business Association loan. And when the news came out that those funds had run out, it was devastating. While we've been able to operate in some capacity, you know, I wasn't seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. That story has actually changed. We were funded by the PPP program. My bank called me on Sunday and said, while the funds have run out at the federal level, we have not finished dispersing them. And given that we were so early in applying for that program, we were the 32,000th applicant in the process out of 250,000 applications.
Oh, wow.
They were able to push through our loan and said only 25% of our applicants have gotten funded, and we can't be more thankful. That money is going to give us a cushion to keep our staff employed, but also to retool a little bit more and come out of this process a stronger company, able to continue serving our clients.
It sounds like you're preparing psychologically for the possibility that this may be something of a long-term prospect.
I think all business owners are thinking about how long this could go on for, and we have to look long term. And while this PPP loan will help us to operate over the next 8 weeks, we have to look 10 weeks out and 14 weeks out and 52 weeks out to say, how do we stay viable as a company? And what this loan will allow us to do is try some efforts to put our services out there and show people that we can deliver value to them while they're in this in-home experience. We can help keep them strong. We can help their bodies still feel good. We can help them psychologically.
I know you're one of the lucky ones so far, but if someone were to ask you what your business needs from the federal and state governments to make it through this time, what would you tell them right now?
We would need long-term assurance that funds are available if needed. Now, as I understand, not everybody who got a payroll protection program loan needed it. And I am very sympathetic to the 75% of companies that didn't get it yet. It's necessary right now in a critical period when we can't be working at full capacity to know that we can still retool and figure out how to operate. But that's just 2 months of cushion. This could go on for a year. And invariably, we as a population of people, I think, are going to be changed by this. Mm-hmm. And so people may be less likely to walk into a gym in 2 months or 5 months, especially if they're older and with good reason they want to take care of themselves. So we're having to think about, what does our model look like 6 months from now, and how do we keep people safe in our personal training setting, you know, with a public walking through, I'm not sure that's possible. So we're looking at major change to the organization to make sure that we do our part to fight the pandemic.
Mark, would you say that you and your staff are finding people in a little bit different state of mind these days?
Yeah, I definitely would. And it's interesting. You may not expect this, but our oldest clients seem to be doing the best. I think their wealth of life experience has equipped them to roll with this. Whereas some of our younger 20 and 30 year old clients went through a period of mourning and devastation, where I think they're coming out of it now. But it's been interesting to see the resiliency of all people through this and the adaptability of how quickly people were able to say, oh, gosh, you know, this video conference training really does work. I think it's important for all businesses to focus on what they can do and take their attention away from what they can't do. And I think small businesses need to be thinking about how to give at this point, because we're all part of one community. And if we focus on what we can do, that's going to yield better results for everybody.
Focusing on what we can do rather than what we can't. This sounds like a pretty good marching order for a workout as well.
Definitely.
Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Thiesmeyer-Hook is the owner of Better Living Fitness in Ann Arbor. Amid the chaos of the coronavirus, Ramadan begins today. A couple of groups are coming together to brighten the spirits of Muslim homes all around Dearborn, pulling a page from December's Holiday Lights playbook.
As far as we know, this is the first Ramadan house lighting competition, at least in the United States that we know of.
That's next on Stateside. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's getting harder to tell one day from another, but Muslim Michiganders know tonight marks the beginning of Ramadan, the month-long holiday celebrated through fasting and reflection and community. So what does all that mean during the pandemic? On the eve of this first day, we check in with Hassan Jaber, president and CEO of Access, one of the central community groups in Muslim and Arab life in Southeast Michigan. Hassan, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
There's a lot I'd like to ask you about, but let's start with how things are going with response to the pandemic. I remember that Access had one of the first drive-through testing sites for COVID-19. Isn't that right?
It is. We've been doing it since mid-March. We formed a partnership with Wayne State University Medical School. We felt the urgency to do whatever we can do to ease the pressure on first responders in particular. We started with a drive-through testing sites in Detroit and in Dearborn. And despite all the challenges and the difficulties, we were able to test hundreds of first responders, and we were able to send back to work with a negative results, 40% of the people tested.
I take it those sites have been well attended.
Yeah, unfortunately. We now moved, April, in the last 2 weeks. We moved to mobile testing, and with the help of and support from Ford Motor Company, provided us with vehicles. So we now target the first responders, but we also have been sending the mobile units to detention facilities in Detroit and Hamtramck, to police department and fire departments in Taylor, Grand Rapids, Flint, Clinton Township. And we also send in these mobile units to mental health agencies in Detroit. So far, we tested 3,700 people.
Wow. Are the mobile units more practical or more cost-effective right now?
They're much more practical, much more cost-efficient, and they can respond much quicker to hotspots and to the needs in the community.
Tell me about who you're most worried about right now among the folks you work with.
So we really still worried about first responders, and in particular, we worried about police, fire departments. We are now much more worried about inmates and prison facilities and people in detention. We also get in lots of requests to cover the police departments and mental health agencies, senior citizen agencies. So it continues to be a struggle to provide. Obviously, we're very limited in the mobile units and ability to respond. So we are trying as much as possible to prioritize where we go.
You work with a lot of people whose family origins lie in different places around the world and folks who have close ties abroad. I'm curious about what the pandemic experience is like for them.
It's amazing, April, that there is this sense of globally we are all in it. We're facing the same challenges. We live in the same conditions. We have the same feelings and the same frustration. Hearing people, obviously the internet is connecting people faster. It's really showing that we are a global community. On one hand, it gives you this sense of being a global citizen, but at the same time, you feel the challenges are bigger than any one community and how much we need to do more to come together and face some of these difficulties.
I can only imagine what this must be like for someone who has, you know, immediate family members, maybe in another country right now, and is accustomed to making at least yearly visits and whose families may rely on them for different forms of support. What are you observing about folks who are in that situation right now?
Obviously, people cannot travel anymore. It's a huge source of frustration, feeling distant. Also, these people rely on each other for not only emotional support, but also for financial support. And it's getting harder and harder for people to spare finances and to be able to support each other. Things are very challenging from the emotional side and also challenging from the financial side.
What do you think is most helpful for those trying to stay in touch across oceans or at least thousands of miles?
It's amazing how much internet and social media is providing connection. I've seen my wife chatting with her sister in Lebanon. That, on one hand, this is how technology have been a wonderful source of connecting people. But again, everyone is feeling the stress of not being able to physically connect.
As I mentioned, this evening is the beginning of Ramadan, but medical experts are suggesting folks abstain from going to mosque for late night prayers, and I believe all the mosques in the area are closed anyway, and that folks break the fast without leaving home, maybe skipping a late night, early morning outing. What does it mean to celebrate in solitude?
Let me just say that I'm very proud of the mosques in the Detroit area and in Michigan overall. The Muslim community was first to respond to the governor call for staying home, and they suspended all services. I know they are also for Ramadan ending any type of congregation, and all services are remote. So it's harder for the Muslim community during Ramadan, because Ramadan is, on one hand, about family and being together. On the other hand, Ramadan is, to my understanding, as a secular person, that Ramadan is about discipline, about sacrifices. It's about reflecting on who we are and our relationship to God. So it's a good timing, although people can't be with families, but it's a good timing for us to reflect, to practice discipline, to be able to focus in a pure way this relationship with God.
Yeah. I've seen so many photos in the past few weeks on social media of folks of other faiths doing their Easter dinners or their Passover Seder dinners with multiple screens at the table as a way of gathering together, even when we can't. I'm guessing a lot of that's going to be happening in homes that are trying to celebrate at this time during Ramadan.
Again, it's amazing how this crisis made us much more closer although we are being forced to stay homes. But again, it's amazing how much in common between people are.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any healthcare workers out there trying to decide whether or to what degree they should fast as would be traditional.
That's a tough one. And I think that for medical and healthcare workers, they've already doing the sacrifices that Ramadan calls for.
For sure.
So we thank them. We need them to be healthy. We need them to stay strong. And I think they need to know that everyone is in support and they've already fulfilled their obligations.
Right. Well, Hassan, thanks for talking to us. And we certainly wish you and your family and extended family a joyful and generous holiday this year.
Thank you so much, April.
Seems like everyone could use a little bit more light right now. And that's especially true during Ramadan. We got wind of a competition that's lighting up Dearborn. Razi Jaffrey is a filmmaker and documentarian working with Halal Metropolis Project. And full disclosure, he worked during his salad days with us on Stateside. Razi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Halal is partnering with a couple of other community organizations to do a Ramadan house lights competition. How did this get started?
Yeah, so I work at the Center for Arab American Studies at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. We had an ongoing exhibit series called Halal Metropolis, which is one of our big projects at the center. Like all other projects and organizations, we were also affected by the virus. We had to shut down our exhibit. And part of the exhibit included all this public programming with panels and lectures and guest speakers. And so when all that got canceled, we started thinking about other ideas and how we can collaborate with other organizations. One idea that we were thinking about was the city of Dearborn actually has a Christmas lighting competition every year. So we thought we would create a Ramadan light competition as well, because one of the things that we've noticed and part of my documentary work and documenting the Arab and the Muslim community of Southeast Michigan is that people are really starting to go all out with their Ramadan decorations, both inside and outside the house. So we teamed up with two organizations, the Michigan Muslim Community Council and the Ramadan Sahur Festival, to plan light up Dearborn this Ramadan with the holiday lights competition.
Razi, how much game does one need to have to take part? I mean, does it have to be a full-on break the grid situation to even get considered?
No, we actually have a nomination process. So anybody can nominate either their own home if they're particularly proud of themselves, or they can nominate a neighbor or a friend or a relative.
Why lights on houses? What do you think that means to people right now?
Well, I think it's such a great, you know, blending of these two traditions and cultures, where you have, of course, the Christmas lighting and decoration traditions that are a part of American culture and American history. And American Muslims are absolutely a part of American culture. And so they've sort of appropriated this tradition to make it their own during their own holidays. And I think right now a project like this is so important because we're collectively facing this crisis. We're all shut into our homes. And, you know, we just wanted to get together with these other organizations and create something positive and create some positive energy and put it out there. And as far as we know, this is the first Ramadan house lighting competition, at least in the United States, that we know of.
Razi, I confess, my first impulse is to jump in the car tonight and go see. But I'm guessing health officials probably would not thank me for that. What is the official policy? I mean, is the hope that people could look at the photos instead of doing drive-bys?
Yeah, exactly. So we're asking the nomination. We have a nomination form and we're asking for photo submission. So if you nominate somebody, we ask that you take a photo of the house. And then I will go around later. And once we have the finalists down, to photograph them, professionally. And so, you know, I'll just be by myself. I'll be photographing from a distance, from a safe distance. But we're asking people to submit their nominations with a photograph for now.
Have you spoken with many friends or family or neighbors who are separated from others, not by city blocks, but by oceans, and maybe how they're trying to stay connected during the holiday?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be such a different Ramadan this year. I'm an immigrant myself. My family's from India. And, you know, I think we're really grateful for the technological tools that we have right now, programs like Zoom and WhatsApp. And I think, you know, those of us that have family and friends abroad, we're already deeply connected to these apps and programs, but they're going to be used so much more now. And so we're seeing that this is the way that people are connecting this year. And, you know, Ramadan is such a communal holiday. It certainly makes fasting easier. It creates a great sense of community and community spirit when you're doing something that's very difficult with another group of, with a large group of people. So this year is going to bring some particular challenges.
Yeah. I noticed that over the past couple of weeks, a lot of families of other faiths were posting photos of their Easter dinners or their Passover mm-hmm. seders, with everybody sort of sitting around the table with a bunch of screens for folks who are far away. I imagine that's going to be repeated for a lot of families throughout Ramadan this year.
Absolutely. You know, our community has been looking at our you know, Christian, Jewish, and other religious, you know, brothers and sisters and kind of how they're doing, because their holidays happen to come a little bit earlier this year with Passover and Easter. And so we were definitely taking cues. I know in different mosques and how they do their Friday services, how they do their Sunday schools. We're definitely, you know, watching to see how those, especially the large scale services for like Easter services or for Passovers, you know, we are definitely taking cues and taking notes in terms of how they were managing it.
Right. How are you going to be celebrating tonight?
Well, I'll be alone. You know, and so Ramadan actually officially starts tonight. So we start fasting tomorrow. And typically what would have happened is we would have started our nightly vigil prayers called the Taraweeh prayers. And so Muslims would go to the mosque and stand in vigil in prayer services, or they would attend lectures and different programs. And you would basically have these programs every night for the next, you know, 27 to 28 days. And so that's obviously not going to be happening. But for me, it's sort of reconnecting with my intentions, you know, and trying to have a deeply personal spiritual experience this year.
Well, thank you so much for telling us about this. And we can't wait to see the results of the light competition.
Of course, I'll be happy to share them with you guys.
Razi Jafri is a filmmaker and documentarian living in Hamtramck. Do you remember last week's big protest in Lansing? Today, a few folks attempted to stage another, albeit much smaller, protest in Lansing. But this time it was outside of Governor Whitmer's house. President Trump's most ardent supporters showed up with campaign signs and bullhorns. Yes, protesting is the new presidential campaign rally in Michigan, at least for now. And along with it come the spoofs. This week, comedian Tom Robinson of Detroiters fame posted this clip to social media, a faux Fox News broadcast, two real protesters from the Great Lakes State, and then Robinson himself masquerading as an angry Michigander.
You can't buy paint, you can't buy lawn, you can't buy lawn fertilizer or grass seed or whatever. I mean, come on. All statewide? Really?
You know, it's time for our state to be opened up. We're tired of not being able to buy the things that we need, go to the hairdressers, get our hair done.
Now's when I start to buy my Halloween stuff. What, am I not supposed to buy my Halloween stuff? Really?
Tom, really, yes, Michigan probably does start celebrating all the holidays a little too early, but can you blame us these days? Stuck inside, dreaming of the next chance we get to celebrate? As for protesters, the real protesters, they're planning to be back at the state capitol next week, and you can expect to hear more about that right here. That's our show for today. Tomorrow, a conversation with comedian Joe Pera. He's from Buffalo, New York, but his show, Joe Pera Talks With You, was shot mostly in the UP. It's a charming, odd tribute to small-town life. Wherever you live, we want to tell you that we're so glad you're listening. Let us know about stories that you want us to cover. Email us, stateside@michiganradio.org. We're on Facebook at Michigan Radio or on Twitter at Stateside. I'm April Baer. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.